We want to begin by pointing out that we are dealing this evening with the subject of the occult, or, as it is popularly known today, the subject of parapsychology or psychic phenomena. The subject of the occult arts is deadly fascinating to human beings. Just as a moth is fascinated by the flame of a candle and keeps darting back and forth, ever closer and closer, until it finally flies into the flame and perishes, even so, secular society at this moment is darting back and forth once again with the flame of the occult arts. And I'm afraid to say there are a lot of Christians who are getting their wings singed in the meanwhile. Let me, perhaps, give this warning at the very beginning of this lecture. Don't assume or think that God has automatically called you to investigate the subject of the occult. God does indeed call a few of his people to investigate this subject, and thus he especially equips them to withstand the assaults of Satan. And any Christian scholar who must deal with the issue of the occult will tell you quite quickly, there is a price to be paid by those who go into Satan's kingdom in order to assess his arsenal. And I think it is important for me to emphasize that for the sake of you and your children, that you should not dabble in the occult, or as a result of this lecture, think that you can become interested in it and seek to study it. If God has called you, he has equipped you, and this is a special calling, and few there be that have it. The first thing that I'd like to point out this evening is that all of you already know an awful lot about the occult, but you don't know it. The reason you do not understand that you already know an awful lot about the occult is that you know about the subject under different names. Instead of understanding the words occult, witchcraft, Satan worship, demon possession, demonic power, etc., you have no doubt heard and read or saw shows on television dedicated to studying ESP, psychic phenomena, psychic abilities, telepathy, speed, PSI. In Hollywood, it's become a very faddish thing to ask someone, what's your psi, or spy, or spi rating? And they want to know, what is the degree of ESP ability that you have? Psychokinesis, the ability to move objects or to affect material reality through mind. The human potentiality movement, which tells you that the potential of the human being is infinite. You have this particularly in modern psychoanalysis groups. Mind reading, ghosts, astral projection or out-of-body experiences, levitation, second sight. Now, whereas probably you were not familiar with the first set of words, such as witchcraft, the occult, demon possession, I would guarantee you that most of you have come into contact with literature or people who have enthusiastically sought to educate you about ESP, parapsychology, and the supposed psychic abilities of man. Now, if you watch certain television shows, such as That's Incredible, Real People, or You Ask For It, you will be told about psychic abilities which people have. There are people which can walk on fire and not be burned. I've seen individuals who were able to stick needles through various parts of their body and not suffer any harm. Or individuals who supposedly can read the minds of others. Or animals that are telepathic and can count out things. Or reports of people having hauntings, visitations by ghosts, or, as they were called in the old time, poltergeists. Now and then you'll see an article about a house where all the dishes flew off of the cupboard, and the chairs and tables are thrown upside down, and where whole bookcases move across the room, and they talk about a poltergeist. It's the old German word for a malicious ghost. Now, some of you have probably even played with some of the occult arts. I wonder how many of you have played with the Ouija board. How many of you have been involved in ESP games or seances? I remember as a child, my parents giving me a crystal ball. Now, it was a black, like a bowling ball, and there was one end of it that was like a little mirror, and it was filled with water. And as you would turn it right side up, a cube would float up, and it would say yes, or it would say no, or it would say other things. And you would ask questions, and then you would check the crystal ball. Or palm reading for a lark. You're out one night late on a college night, and so you decide to stop at the palm reading at Madame Zuba's. And she gives you a palm reading or a tea leaf reading or something of that nature. What you must understand is that a rose by any other name still smells the same. What was once called the occult arts is now called parapsychology. Once what was called witchcraft is now called psychic abilities or ESP. Once what was called demonic power is now called psychic energy or psychokinesis. And you see, we are involved in a situation in which the name has changed, but the game remains the same. And you see, this is part of the hoodwinking that Satan has performed in our own generation. I assure you that if the individuals who are involved in the present parapsychology movement were up front and said to people, we would like to invite you to be involved in witchcraft. We want to test you to see which of you are possessed by demons and thus have demonic power, the people would not be flocking to the various seminars and classes that they give. What they have simply done is a mass PR, a public relations campaign, in which they have relabeled and renamed the things which have been going on for millenniums, which have been observed for millenniums, and which Christians have had to fight against, either in the Judaic sense or later in the apostolic sense, as being demonic and satanic. Let us begin by giving a brief overview of the history of the rise of parapsychology. During the Middle Ages, with the Roman Church returning to the pagan foundations of Western culture, you find that the church and the state was infested with astrologers, mediums, witches. Historians note that at the time of the Reformation, there were more black masses and Satan worship said in France than there were Catholic masses being held. As a matter of fact, the historians point out, the same Catholic priests generally who performed Sunday morning the mass for the loyal Catholic followers was the same guy who turned the crucifix upside down and 12 o'clock that night did the black mass for the Satanists. Europe was absolutely flooded with demonic teaching, with individuals who were attempting to fly through the air. I have read the recipes that the witches used for various of their potions. And people forget that these people were in dead earnest. Thus, for example, one potion entitled Ointment for Flying said, obtain a newborn male child. Fry him out to render the fat, for you must have the fat of a rendered baby in order to have the proper mixture for the flying ointment. The witches practiced cannibalism, murder, incest, rape, blasphemy, and all manner of horrors. It is no wonder that in Protestant countries, laws were passed which made it illegal to be a witch. When someone begins to talk about Salem, Massachusetts, and begins to say, oh, wasn't that horrible? Well, if you were living in a day and age when the witches were eating people, killing people, kidnapping babies, and rendering out their fat by frying them in oil, I think you would be the first one to put the firebrand on the bushes underneath the witches. But you see, Europe was crawling with witchcraft. It was crawling with the occult. When the Protestant Reformation came, you have Luther and Calvin and the others who thundered against it. Thus, in Protestant countries, laws were passed, science was stressed, and for a while, astrology nearly died out. Witchcraft nearly died out. It became very unpopular to be talking about the evil eye, to be muttering curses. Most of your Protestant countries thought that the church and the state should be united into one grand theocracy. Thus, they went back to the Old Testament for theocratic law, and Moses said, "Suffer not a witch to live." So it became not only unpopular, it also became a point of life and death. So the little old ladies who rushing around and casting spells were soon disposed of in Protestant countries. I'm sorry to say that in most of the Catholic countries to this day, witchcraft has remained a very powerful force. At the beginning of the 19th century, or really we can date it to an exact time of 1857, you have the beginning of liberalism within the state church, particularly in England. This is the time when, for the first time, preachers and theologians begin to say that the Bible was not inspired. The Bible was not of God. Now, sure, there had been liberal critics and antagonists to Christianity. There were plenty of those, particularly in the history of philosophy, people like Voltaire and others. But these were not critics outside of the church who were nagging at the Christians. These were the preachers who wore the cloth of the church and ate the money of the church. They became the ones to attack Christianity from within. With the rise of liberalism, it became very popular to strip Christianity of any supernatural elements. You had thus the rise of all those miraculous explanations in order to get away with the miracles of Christ. So he didn't really walk on the water, it was a sandbar. He really didn't feed the 5,000. He just made all of those stingy people take the food which they'd hidden under their cloaks out and share with everybody. I have read some of the most ridiculous explanations and rationalizations which supposedly would strip Christianity of any supernatural elements. Well, with the supernatural elements being stripped from Christianity, with rationalism and scientism calling for the death of Christianity, you had various individuals who became interested in the supernatural, particularly in the supernatural world that existed before Christianity. And you had the beginning of Spiritism. Spiritism was the practice of seeking to contact the spirits of the dead. It was the attempt to prove, by scientific examination, that the soul of man continues after death. People like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes stories, used their money and influence, and even the royalty got involved in seances. As a matter of fact, some of the books which I have read lists some of the individuals who attended seances. Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. Theologians, writers, secularists, religionists, anti-religionists. It became a very popular thing to go to seances. One group called the British Spiritualist Society regularly met in order to study mediums, levitation, telepathy, and the like. Now, this continued amongst the spiritualists, and not in the Christian church, and not in secular society per se, until you get to the 20th century. In the 1930s, J.B. Rhine at Duke University began his investigation of the Spiritist movement. He first of all sought to prove the existence of the soul after death by examining and hooking up the mediums and having them give seances. Now, he wanted to prove that the mediums really could contact dead people. The trouble is that he could never prove that they weren't faking it. When he saw that it was utterly hopeless to prove that the spirits of people exist after death, he then asked the witches and the mediums, the people who were the spiritists, "What else can you do?" And they quickly told him about levitation, telepathy,
apportation, teleportation, causing fire to appear and disappear, mending watches, and things of this nature. So J.B. Ryan decided to investigate these things, but to give it scientific terminology because he was taking money from a university. He therefore named it extrasensory perception, or ESP. He is therefore the father of parapsychology. He is the one who coined the term ESP. He went on to seek to demonstrate that telepathy existed by the use of a horse. A horse was brought in by a farmer who said that this horse could read his mind. And the farmer would say, "All right, Clem, 1 + 1. And the horse would clomp out 2. And the farmer said, "You see, my horse can read my mind." And J.B. Ryan, after exhaustive examination, set forth the telepathic horse as the proof of the transference of ideas without speech, but simply through mental means. It was later discovered by other researchers that the telepathic horse was simply reading body language, that the farmer would flinch or wink or move his knee or move his toe or something, and when they put a board or a wall between the farmer and his horse, you could ask the horse to add numbers till purgatory freezes over, and the horse would never answer. Now, his experiments, particularly to prove telepathy, not only with the horse, but also with correspondence with cards. He'd look at a card that has a star, and you were told to write out the figure what you see, or he would use numbers or a deck of cards. And he said that he had proven that some people have ESP, extrasensory perception. They'd be able to perceive things or have knowledge of something not coming through the five senses. Later on, Johns Hopkins University, Colgate University, Brown University, and several other universities, like the Methodist University, all of them tried to reduplicate what J.B. Ryan had done in his laboratory, and they all failed to reduplicate it. That is, the results were no greater than what you would come up with chance probability. Now, when you are examining something in terms of whether or not you have ESP, you first have chance probability. So if you have a coin and you flip it, you've only got 2 sides to that coin, and it's 50-50 as to whether or not you'll get it right. Mathematicians have further refined chance probabilities to tell you if you flip that coin 100 times, they can predict almost accurately how many times you will end up with heads and how many times you will end up with tails. These follow basic laws of probability. Now, when someone seeks to prove something, astrology, telepathy, something of this nature, they have to prove that the results of their experimentations are so far greater than what chance would produce that this means that there's a special authority or special power or ability involved. The reason that Johns Hopkins, Colgate, Brown and other universities could not reduplicate J.B. Ryan's experiments was that Ryan explained they didn't have the right kind of people. They needed to go to the mediums. They needed to go to the spiritists. But you see, this immediately brought up a problem. If something is human, then you should be able to take students out of the classroom or people off the street and give them ESP or parapsychology examinations. If the only people who are able to do these things are the peoples who are involved in witchcraft, then you are immediately linked with the world of the occult. Now, his experiments basically lasted from 1930 to 1970. He invented his terminology. He set up the criteria for examining parapsychological examinations. He set up tests. He was the pioneer in the whole science, or pseudoscience, of parapsychology. And up until 1970, really, not too many people noticed what he was doing. The religious world was not sitting up and taking notice of this. And the secular world, the scientific universities, were not sitting up and taking notice either. Beginning with 1970, we have the popular wave of occultism beginning to build.
In the early 1970s, there was a veritable explosion of books, magazine articles, games, newspaper articles, television shows, etc., all dealing supposedly with parapsychology. You have parapsychology courses began to be taught in college, and you could get a degree in parapsychology. Even, it found its way into public schools, elementary, junior high, and high school. Teachers who were testing kids for their SPE level, for their ESP ability. Thus, we have three basic stages. There was the occultic spiritistic stage from the middle 1800s up until 1930. And then you had from 1930 to 1970, where J.B. Ryan led the way in pioneering and developing the terminology. And the beginning in 1970 up to 1980, you had the scientific phase where these things were discussed in the context of cold scientific research. No one used the word ghosts, no one used the word mediums, and no one used the word occult or witchcraft. They used the terminology that J.B. Ryan had established. So now, in the 1970s, all of a sudden, in the secular world, you had an explosion, and everybody began to read it. In the religious world, you had the beginning of a group started by some United Methodists called Frontiers, Spiritual Frontiers, which is a group in mainline denominations in which they encourage pastors and lay people to get involved with parapsychology. Up till 1980, no one wanted to acknowledge the spiritistic or occultic background. What they said was this: mankind, in his evolutionary process, is now developing new psychic abilities. And the reason we have an explosion of interest is because man is now developing these potentials. Well, frankly, they were pulling the wool over the public's eyes. Dr. Clifford Wilson and Dr. John Weldon and others have pointed out that the very terminology that they used was rooted in the occult, particularly in J.B. Ryan's work. Beginning in 1980, we find for the first time that in the religious and in scientific circles, they are no longer pretending that they are not involved in the occult. Instead, if you read some of the popular magazines on the newsstand or watch the shows, whereas 5 years ago they would not have talked about spirits, they would not have talked about ghosts, they would not have talked seriously about mediums and seances, they are talking about it now. So you can call up and rent a ghost. You have discussion of setting up equipment to deal with hauntings in houses, dealing with the poltergeist who throws the dishes on the floor. And in the reading in parapsychology, which I have been doing recently, I have discovered that both the secular and religious parapsychology groups, which heretofore had not acknowledged that they were studying witchcraft, that they now acknowledge that what they are studying went under the name of witchcraft for thousands of years. Thus you have groups like Wicca, W-I-C-A, and the neo-pagan movement, which instead of being ashamed of their witchcraft background, now glorify it. Even in the worship of Earth Mother, which the extreme feminist movement is now toying with, it is plainly stated that the witches were right. My mother-in-law gave me a book called The Sugar Blues. Now, the book was supposedly against sugar, but actually, as I got halfway through the book was a defense of witchcraft. And which he went on to say that the witches were right, and the witches had psychic powers, and the mediums and the spiritists, and all of these individuals were truly where it is at. And today we must dump Christianity and get back to the pagan roots of Western society, that only in witchcraft will our sexual drives be set free, and only in Christianity will we get rid of our guilt feelings and hang-ups. Well, I became very upset with a book that's supposed to be against sugar, but it's actually for witchcraft. But this is what you find right now in the 1980s
is that it is fastly moving back to the world of the occult. What about in the religious world? Well, Spiritual Frontiers, one of their biggest leaders was the Episcopal Bishop James Pike, who denied the Trinity, who denied the miracles of Christ, but attended seances. Now, he was one of the big leaders in the Spiritual Frontiers movement. And originally, you see, these individuals did not claim any affiliation with the occult. But this last year, there was a Spiritual Frontiers festival held at a local college, which is a church-related college. As part of the festival, they had booths. And the booths were for the palm readers, the astrologers, the crystal ball gazers, and etc. So the Spiritual Frontiers probably, at least to some scholars, is fast moving in the area of blatant occultism. Now, what should the Christian's attitude be toward this whole development? Well, number one, we should not be fooled by a new name. I'll be on various talk shows or in debates or discussions with individuals, and I say, we are dealing now with the issue of the occult. Oh, no, we're dealing with science. We're dealing with ESP. It's not witchcraft, it's ESP. See the book, ESP. They think because the name has changed, the game has changed. And you see, the Christians must be very loud and vocal that we are not fooled by an old product dressed up in new clothes. And we must be vocal in pointing out to society in any way we can that this is the same old witchcraft that was peddled for millenniums. The individuals who opposed Moses and who opposed Paul are with us today. Secondly, we should point out that God clearly condemns all of witchcraft, of parapsychology, as forbidden in Deuteronomy 18:10-14. He does not say that it's condemned because it's impossible. He says that it is condemned because God forbids it. Nowhere in Scripture is it ever hinted at that there are no spirits to contact. What we are told in Scripture is simply this. One, there is another dimension. There is a spirit world. But this dimension, this spirit world, is at war. There are those who are good spirits, and there are those who are evil spirits. Thus, this other dimension is a mixture of good and evil, just like our dimension is. We are creatures of the earth, flesh and blood. They are creatures of their dimension, composed only of mind or mental energy. Secondly, the only side which will cooperate in occult arts is the evil side. God is not interested in Ouija boards, crystal balls, seances, levitation. Jesus could care less if you're able to levitate a feather or 1 gram weight. But there are spirits which are very interested in cooperating with the occult arts, and they are the evil spirits. Therefore, the true source of all authentic psychic phenomena must be traced to these evil, malignant minds. The reason I stress authentic, probably 90% or more of all psychic phenomena is fraud. It either is simply something based on chance, which anybody could happen, or it is fraud, like the telepathic horse that J.B. Ryan put forth. You need to understand cold reading and the understanding of body language, and then you'll understand why it's fraudulent. I would suggest two books for you to read in this regard. Flim Flam by the amazing Randy. The Fakers by Paul Miner. In Flim Flam, you have a magician show you how he can reduplicate everything that Uri Geller does. And you have the Fakers, who are two Christians who attempt to do the same. One word of caution. In the Fakers, they go a little too far and would almost say, there is no occult. There are no evil spirits and demons. Everything is a fraud and a magician's trick. Well, you've got two extremes.
And you need to take a balanced approach in which you acknowledge those authenticated cases of the occult and trace them to demonic powers, as does Kurt Koch, and then the fraud ones, which the magicians will uncover. Thirdly, Christians must educate people about the fact that the new names are an old product, and that they must be careful that it is not taught in the public schools. And talking with some individuals, they told me in some of the classes that they had in a local high school right in this county, some of the teachers introduced them to ESP, parapsychology, trying to get the kids to levitate things and find out their psychic level. This is all nothing more than witchcraft. It is religion. If the Christians cannot practice their religion in the public schools, then I am not going to stand around and let the witches do it. So the Christians are going to have to stand up and be counted. They're going to have to be bold and not intimidated. And let me conclude on this mark. Those who are in the secular parapsychology movement, when they are talking among themselves, are absolutely free in discussing the occult and witchcraft and Satan worship and everything else. When they are confronted with the Christian who calls it witchcraft, they immediately have acute amnesia. And they will try to intimidate you that parapsychology is science. What you must repeat ad nauseam to them is this. In order for parapsychology to be a science, they must put forth experiments which can be reduplicated in any laboratory by anyone. J.B. Rhine's experiments could not be reduplicated at other universities. Something that cannot be reduplicated is not scientific. It cannot be observed. It cannot be studied. After all these years, the parapsychologists have yet to establish any clear empirical or scientific evidence of the validity of what they're doing. Or they have gone to the witches and to the mediums, to the Hindu gurus, and to the people involved in the worship of the UFOs in order to produce their experiments. They begin their assumption, they begin their work with the assumption that there are no other powers at work. And this is their fatal assumption. As a Christian, you must not have in your home, you must not play with, you must not entertain, you must not let your children play with the arts of the occult. Do not read the bestsellers, which are practically all about demon possession. I was in a bookstore yesterday, and I wanted to see what was on the top 10 selling list. Half of it had to do with demons possessing people. Don't read it. Don't go see the films that glorify Satan, where he always wins in the end. Like I tell my wife, and I said, well, when they have the old Dracula movies with Bela Lugosi, then I'd like Ruth Ann to watch to see the power of Christianity dispel the darkness of Satan. But in the modern vampire movies, he kills the Christians and crumbles the crosses in his hands. I do not care to watch Satan and his lie that he will win in the end. What about the occult? What about parapsychology? It is simply the old device of Satan, in which he tried to have men believe in the divinity of man and in the possibility of man becoming deity. Beware of it. Do not get involved in it. And do not be intimidated by the modern witches.